Need to order. Today is Friday, April 21st, 2023, and the time is 3:34 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Presence today is Senator Klayman, Senator Dunbar, co-chair Giesel, myself, co-chair Bishop, Senators Kaufman, Kawasaki, and Willikowski are excused today. I'd like to thank our support staff. It's Friday. You can take tomorrow off. Carrie Cooperator and Amanda's hiding behind the curtain. Good to see you. Today's agenda, SB 82 Cook Inlet, new administrative area permit buyback, invited in public testimony. Public testimony today on SB 68, public notice for water rights by Senator Giesel. And we will switch gavels, take an at ease. At that point, we're going to have SB 48 carbon offset program on state land. So we're now to SB 82 Cook Inlet. And this is a second hearing today. We have invited testimony from Mr. Ken Coleman, president of the Eastside Coalition. Senator Willikowski is online. And Senator Willikowski, thank you, sir. And with that, Mr. Coleman, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ken Coleman. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and 53-year set netter, and reside in Kenai, Alaska. I am the president of the Eastside Consolidation Association, a nonprofit that was formed some 6 years ago to effect a change in set net permits and with the intent of doing a gear reduction buyback. And so we are recognized nonprofit. It's required under the CFEC regulations to form a nonprofit of interested parties whom are permit holders and pursue the gear reduction or buyback in this case that is availed to all fisheries in the state if they feel that they're in that position. In this case, the reason we're here is manyfold, but had there been a vehicle in the current law that allowed for set netters to be able to segregate their population, if you will, there's five different districts in Cook Inlet, have what's called an optimization or ask for an optimization study from the CFEC to decide whether there was the current number of permits were the right number of permits or were needed to be more or less in most cases. And in this case, what was the determination is yes, they could do an optimization program. It would be for the entire inlet, not just one part in which we are, the east side. And so in essence, if we had a process started and a number affixed to it, for instance, you had 500 permits, maybe the 350 was the appropriate number. That number, then the 150 that would be subtracted from the fishery would have to be applied over the entire Cook Inlet rather than what we consider to be the issues, which are the east side set net area, which is primarily from a place of North Kenai called Boulder Point all the way down to Cape Nanilchik and a mile and a half and a mile offshore, respectively. And so the only way to find a solution was to find a way to segregate the east side by virtue of creating a new administrative area and then go through a process of reduction in that manner. So that's the mechanics of the reason we're sitting here looking for state law to change. It's more of a surgical thing, if you will, but it's necessary for us to move ahead. So page two, and I'll try to be brief at these. I won't read them verbatim, but of course, as I mentioned, we're trying to reduce the number of set nets and permits along the east side of Cook Inlet, and primarily although not all, our reasoning is to find a viable, our way back to an economically viable fishery. And we've been around a long time, and we'd like to see a future as well. And an economically, or have sustainable escapements into our rivers for all the user groups. And this is, we think that this is going to affect all the user groups in a positive way, and we want to work collaboratively with those folks. And so a passage of this would be helpful in that too. I think I already on page three. We've
Mr.
already
Coleman,
spoke
could
to.
I, could I interrupt you just for 1 second, sir?
Sure.
I inadvertently, and I apologize to the bill sponsor. Could you please introduce yourself for the record, Senator Bjorkman?
Thank you, Chair Bishop. My name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman. I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula, and much of the east side set net fishery is in my district, from just north of Kasilof all the way to Boulder Point in Nikiski. And Mr. Coleman is doing an excellent job presenting the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman, sorry for that. Please continue.
Thank you. So if we can, just skip slide three, excuse me. Are we working? Here we go.
You were doing that job great, too.
Thank you. And so we are the Eastside Sadnetters. We've been around for, as I mentioned, since 1878. Our fishery is primarily a family-oriented fishery. I've got a very good friend who's also been working with me for the last 7 years. He's been his family's generations old in this. I'm a second generation fisherman. I have my sons and their kids now. So 4 years of Coleman's doing this, and we're representative of so many others in Cook Inlet, and people who go back to the early 1900s are still doing prosecuting the fishery as they may and or can in their places, and have been for over 100 years now. It's really a family-oriented business. And so we've been around for almost 150 years. We've had a lot of support, industry, canneries that have been around, and although there's been some consolidation over the years, they've been around through the years with us through set net years and trap years, those are our friends in the drift fishery also work with these folks, and they're part of our long-standing history. Slide number six is the Upper Cook Inlet set net area, and as the Senator just mentioned, Boulder Point, which is just north of the what's called the Forelands in Cook Inlet, where it comes together, as you see, all the way down to Nanilchik, all along those beaches, some 60 miles. Beaches where people can put their nets out of the north of the Kenai River out to a mile, south of the Kenai River out to a mile and a half, and those are nautical measurements. So there's quite a large area, and there's 440 permits and businesses that reside in that. There's five districts in Cook Inlet, as I mentioned up earlier. The northern district up toward Anchorage and the west side in northern Cook Inlet. The west side of Cook Inlet, which extends all the way down from what's called the Forelands and all the way down to Kamishak Bay. Southern district, which is around Homer. There's also a set net fishery there. And then Caligan Island district, which is the one the big island that you see just west of the Kenai area. And of course, the east side with the orange circle around it, the oblong circle around it, and specifically the area that we're talking about. And when we're asking to have a new administrative area, we're talking about that area in particular, and that would be then segregated from the rest of Cook Inlet so that there can be regulation, self-determination issues that are taken care of that only apply to that area. The next slide and I may have mine out of order, but slide number eight speaks to the permit migration into the east side. Prior to the mid 1980s, the Cook Inlet set net area was primarily a beach fishery that extended, as I said, from the Cape Nanilchik to Boulder Point. And there was some limitations put on the outward bound area for the east side set nets that created then a finite amount of area. In that same time period, there was enhancement going on. There was very good freshwater recruitment and rearing of the number of sockeye, and there became large runs to the Kasiloff and Kenai River. And all this land on the east side, or excuse me, tidewater that was not filled in with nets became filled in with nets. And it was a completely legal and above board mechanism. There was extra room. Everybody ascribed to the spatial requirements, and we grew. Mm-hmm. Do the next slide, Senator, please. And so we grew, and it became a saturated, and it worked. It all worked for all parties. So there was plenty of fish for all the set netters and all the drifters and all the sport fishery and personal use fisheries for everybody. Enhancement became a thing of the past. There was some closures of some of the programs. Nature being who she is, runs were more not quite as robust as they were before. There was a growing sport fishery and personal use fishery was promulgated, and there's the world got a little bit smaller for set netters. And we all are vying for the same common use resource. And so over time, and with Board of Fish regulations, became very apparent that we had to make some changes. Hence, we're here again to try to find some way through reduction to financial viability. We did talk about the way for permit buybacks and gear reduction acts and the mechanisms for doing those things. In trying to establish this buyback program, what we're asking for is to reduce the number of permits by about 45%, and those who would voluntarily leave the fishery would leave behind tideland that otherwise could be filled in with new permits, or not new permits, but other permits that would be left behind. And so there's the idea of closing waters, if you vacated those and then not allowing entry into those waters, would enhance the availability for those stocks to go to other user groups, which is part of this. A big part of this is, again, trying to find a way to work with our fellow fishermen, and whether be they set netters or drift fishermen or all the attendant sport fisheries and personal use fisheries. We're trying to find a way to do this to make sure that we all have a benefit. The number of permits in Cook Inlet-wide, not the east side, Cook Inlet-wide is about 736 permits. Every year about 440, right at 440, average of 440 registered to fish on the east side. You have to, of course, have a valid permit, and you have to apply for every year called buoy stickers. That's really an intense sticker that says you're going to fish on the east side in one section or another. And so that's one of the other mechanisms, and it's important for us to know who's doing what and where. And particularly if this came to fruition, that's one of the qualifiers so that we in fact worked with Senator Giesel before to come up with a program to make sure that whatever we do is makes sense, and that nobody can game the system. A big issue for us is we want to make sure this works and works well. So to all those permits leaving would result in about 600 net set nets leaving, which if you cube it out, it's about 6,400 acres of land that would be offset. I would mention that the language in language in the bill says 200 permits or more may leave. It could be having had a discussion that might be the future, but at this point we're asking for 200 permits to leave the fishery on a voluntary basis. So closing waters, removing nets on page 11 is about 45% of the permits we've leaving. roughly 44% of the permits in Cook County that have leases, tied land leases assigned to them. It's not a legal requirement, but people do that for a number of reasons. It's not mandatory, as I mentioned, and so those would also be vacated if someone were to apply, be awarded a reduction in the reduction format, I should say, and so those would go away. But I want to stress that it doesn't need to be if you left a fishery, it doesn't need to be through a lease. Many people have those leases and or those locations, as we call them, and most everybody respects all that. And so in 2021, former Senator Michicki conducted a survey, and in fact there's been three surveys. In a statistically responsive way, 56% people responded to the following question: do you support the concept of a voluntary fleet reduction program for Cook Inlet set net fishery that would cost nothing to those who do not participate and remain fishing? And 92.4% of the people responded they were in support. I do want to mention very quickly that when it says that nothing to those who do not participate or nothing to those who stay behind them will pay for this. We're looking for outright grants and government grants to fund this. We're considered a stressed fishery. We do qualify for federal reduction program through NOAA, a fishery reduction program, and whether we access or not is going to be based on how and where we procure the funds from. And I would stress that we're not asking for any state funds to fund this. So quickly, we've established a value of $260,000, and we determined that by average, taking a hindcast of what did a permit, a single set net permit in the east side, average per year, and it was around $20,000 a permit. Sometimes that went back and forth over in a rolling average, and of course, we didn't look back and use these. We've had four disaster requests in the last 5 years, and most of those are based on regulatory issues that don't allow us to fish in certain circumstances when there's a lack of king salmon, and we bear that kind of a burden of conservation. And at any rate, we took that, we averaged 10 times, and I'd have to stress that these are small businesses that would be leaving forever. They're not, it's not meant to be punitive in any way. And then there was a $60,000 component added to that for tax consequences. Having spoken with the federal delegation on a number of instances, if there's a potential for a tax holiday on these, then that number goes down to that extent, to $60,000. So anyway, more of an informational slide in 46 years, we've decreased actually from 746 to 736 in the Cook Inlet itself, and most of these fisheries in Cook Inlet are very Alaskan centric, if you will. 84%, in fact, in our fishery, 86% of the Central Peninsula residents possess those permits. 80% are Kenai, Soldat, and the Nenelchik, et cetera, residents, actually. And so it's a local fishery, as is all the fisheries, I think. And most of the commercial fisheries, certainly, our set-net friends are of the same ilk. And so this bill is a mechanism for moving forward to provide the fleet an opportunity and capability of harvesting sockeye while reducing non-targeted Chinook salmon in accordance with current regulations, which change every 3 years or hopefully not. Regulatory stability is a big issue in commercial fisheries, not just ours, but in every place. And so we're hoping that by doing this, we're gonna reduce the non-targeted things. And in fact, our fishery's done a number of innovative things over the last 10 years to try to convey those fish to the river by reducing depths of nets. We've now had permit and area reductions, so we're really trying to find a way. This is, again, we think a great opportunity for us to affect a change that helps everybody and allows people to leave with some financial dignity. And by the way, I would say so many of these people that want to exit our fishery want to fish somewhere else. They're not just taking money and not spending it in Alaska. They really want to do the thing that they love the most, and it's a great way to it's just a great way to have an income, and it's so family oriented. All my kids grew up there, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything, I think. So we've done outreach over the last several years, and prior to even starting this conversation with people in the sport fishing community and the guiding community and the personal use community, trying to find a way to begin a conversation, as I mentioned up front, to at least extinguish the fish wars. If not that, at least you come to an equilibrium, a detente, if you will. And we found a way to have some good and collaborative discussions in depth over several years to get to this point. And from a guy who couldn't talk to those folks for tens of years to somebody now that can at least pick up the phone and have a conversation, I think it's actually good for all of us. And so the slide 18 is a poignant letter from Mezy Hermanson that, if you take the time to read, will pull on your heartstrings, but it's indicative of how we all feel about what we've done for so long. And with that concludes our presentation. I hope I didn't get too long enough.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Well done. Committee members, questions for Mr. Coleman? Seeing none, Senator Bjorkman, do you have any comments you want to make before we go to public testimony?
Well, I'd just like to remind the committee and members of the public that Senate Bill 82, this Senate net buyback bill, is optional for the fishermen in the Eastside Senate net fishery of Cook Inlet to participate in, and all the funding to provide for the purchase of these permits is going to come from non-governmental organizations or federal grants from organizations like NOAA, and it will not impact the state treasury in a negative way. And so I think it's important to point that out because of conservation issues of Chinook salmon in the Kenai River, as well as allocated decisions by the Board of Fish in managing populations of king salmon as well as sockeye salmon on the east side of Cook Inlet. It's really made this fishery have some economic troubles, and we can help alleviate those and make this fishery, I think, put it back on track to become economically viable again through this optional program that will become available to Eastside Setnet fishermen at no cost to the state. So I'm happy to carry this piece of legislation.
All right, thank you, and appreciate it, Mr. Coleman, for coming in today. Okay, so I just want to give a couple of comments before we go to public comment. And I don't know what it is, but something about fish generates a lot of interest. So this committee has already got about 11% participation, and the last bill had, what was it, over 90, Mr. Clayman? Was there 90 set up to testify?
I think we may have, by the time we recess, I think we were pushing 100.
All right. The reason I say that to our testifiers listening at home, if you could be succinct, 2 minutes or less, and tell us, are you in favor or not in favor of the bill, it would be appreciated, as we do have two other bills before us today, and we'd be appreciative if you could be succinct. And we value your testimony, but we do have two other bills before us today. So we're going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing none, we're going online to Pat Zerfluff. And can you hear us, Pat?
Yeah, I'm here. This is Pat Zerfluff.
Yep. And name for the record in two minutes or less.
Okay, yeah, it's Pat Zerflu, Z-U-R-F-L-U-H, and I'll make it brief. I've been sitting at it there in the inlet for upper inlet up by the regulatory marker south of the Kenai for around 45 years up there. I'm one of those that Kenny said migrated up there. In fact, I'd like to thank Mr. Senator Borkovich and Kenny for letting us say our piece. So anyway, I just want to make it brief that I got a small operation, can't make any money fishing on one or two days a season, and I'm all in favor of the buyback, so I hope we can get this put together.
Thank you for your brevity. We're going to go to Joanne Withers. Joanne Withers, please put yourself on the record and proceed.
Yes, thank you so much for allowing me to testify. My name is Joanne Withers. I'm reaching out to you today in support of SB 82. My family and I own 5 setting up permits in Cook Inlet and have been fishing as a family for over 36 years. We love the way of life and we see it as a way to contribute to help feed the world, assist us in making a living, and support the Kenai Peninsula community. Over the years, we've seen so many changes in our fishery with the struggle between sports, subsistence, and commercial use, and the decline of the king salmon. We love our fishery. We do not want to give it up or see it go away. However, we feel that the buyback program is a way that the fishery can still survive while helping some of the fishermen out by compensating them for their loss. We strongly believe that a reduction in the set net fleet and the closing of those waters will enhance the Kenai River and improve the opportunities for in-river sports fishermen, guides, and subsistence users, as well as giving some commercial fishermen more time. So again, thank you so much for allowing me the time, and thank you for the support of SB 82.
Thank you. Russell Clark, Kenai. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less, please.
Yes, my name is Russell Clark. I'm from Kenai. First, I'd like to thank Senator Bjorkman for sponsoring this bill. He really he saw what we were going through this last summer during our closure, so I'd like to thank him for this, for trying to help do something to help resolve the situation. I am in support of SB 82. My family and I have fished Cook Inlet for 20-something years. I think that SB 82 is a win-win for the community. I think it will bring bring money into the community that's not already there. And it will also help stabilize a fishery that is in dire need of help. There's so many families that have been fishing set net sites for generations, and what this will allow, it will allow these sites to stabilize, and it will give an opportunity for some fishermen to retire, and fishermen that are left. It will also help by clearing out or reducing the number of fishermen. So it should be a benefit to both fishermen that remain and fishermen that are able to be bought out from this. And so I do support SB 82.
Thank you. Gary Hollier in Kenai, please put yourself on the records, please, in 2 minutes or less.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Bishop and Co-Chairman Diesel. And I'd like to also thank Senator Bjorkman for sponsoring SB 82 and also for the efforts of Ken Coleman and Tim Keener to go to Juneau to try to stump for this bill. I'm a 52-year Eastside set netter. I'm a 70-year lifelong resident of Kenai. I received an original limited entry permit. My family now has a 9 permit operation. I'll give you a little quick survey. I buy fish from Ocean Beauty for Ocean Beauty Icicle as a buying station. A few years ago, I surveyed all 48 permit holders to sell to me. 100% were in favor of this buyback. 32 said that they would put their permits into the buyback program. So 66% thought that they would try to get into this buyback. This is good for all facets of the fishery, commercial, personal use, and sport fishery. If 200 permits are removed from the fishery, all that fish isn't going to be caught by the remaining fishermen. A vast majority are going to go into the river, which will help diffuse a whole lot of the problems with this the Kenai River. Set meadows are a huge part of 86% Alaska residents. This is a voluntary program. There is no state money being used. This bill has been toward the legislature the last 4 years, and I find it kind of appalling that the legislature wants to help Alaska residents, and this doesn't get out of Senate Finance Committee. I just can't believe it. This is a win-win for everybody. The biggest change in this bill is make the east side a super exclusive area so that the permits move out. No permits can move back in. It's a win-win for everybody. So I'm urging that SB 82 passes and passes this year to try to get some relief on the east side to also help the personal use fishermen that are 100% Alaska residents that dip at the mouth of the Kenai and Kasilok River. This is a win-win, and I am in full support of SB 82 along with all of my neighbors. Thank you for your time.
George Townsend, Kenai. Mr. Townsend, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less, please.
Yes. Hello. My name is George Townsend, 68 years old, live in Kenai, and I've spent my entire adult life here on the peninsula. I've commercial fished since I was 18, pet net fished in Kasilof since 1984. I believe that having a buyback plan is the only thing that makes sense going forward. Having fewer permits and leases as a result, fewer nets in the water will help make this fishery profitable again. And I want to thank everybody for their all the time and effort that they put into this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend, for being succinct. Mr. Bruce Manley, Mr. John Manley in Kenai. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less, please.
Yes, name's John Manley, and I've been commercial fishing in here for a long time. And like most set netters on the east side, I live here, which I think is very important for this thing and for this bill. And it is a win-win for everybody. And with like this other caller just said, I don't understand why it's been hanging up for as long as it has. Thank you.
All right, we appreciate your succinctness. Mr. Bruce Manley in Kasilof.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less, please. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Bruce Manley, and I've been fishing since 75 as a permit holder, and very much in favor of Senate Bill 82, and I don't have a whole lot to say, but I really want to thank Senator Borkman and especially the amount of effort and time that Kenny Coleman has spent on this job of trying to get this bill passed. And that's about all I got to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Lisa Gabriel, Kenai. Good afternoon. Please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Chair Bishop and Co-Chair Giesel. My name is Lisa Gabriel. I'm a lifelong resident of the Kenai Peninsula, and I currently live in Kenai. I'm testifying today in support of SB 82. My husband, Brian, and I have owned and operated our family set net site on Kalifornsky Beach since 1987. For the past 36 years, we've worked on our site with our children and now have the honor of sharing our set netting with our small grandchildren and my parents, who are well into their 80s. Each family member, regardless of age, has a purpose and a value on our family beach site. In the past 30 years, the fishing opportunity for the east side set net fishery has declined dramatically. The increased pressure on the resource for all species of salmon by all users has landed set net fishermen on the beach for the better part of their fishing seasons. My husband and I are the stewards of the number one and number two shore fisheries leases in Cook Inlet. These legacy sites have survived since territorial days and have originally fished between the traps on our beach. We'd like to protect their history and hope to return them to the productive sites of the historic past. This summer, we're facing an unprecedented full closure of our fishery, not because of our targeted sockeye species, but for the fear that our nets could harvest king salmon. Our situation is dire. This season, I am not a fisherman. I am only a permit holder. I believe SB 82 is the correct solution to return financial viability and fishing opportunity to the historic Eastside Senate fishery that has existed for over 140 years. It will offer those fishermen who choose to remain in the fishery a chance to exist as fishermen on their site far into the future. It proposes to retire from it, remove nets, and close the associated waters. The exiting individuals will be fairly compensated for their businesses. They can exit the fishery with dignity. The remaining fishermen will be offered the chance of quality opportunity to harvest and the plentiful sockeye moving through Upper Cook Inlet, so their family businesses have the financial survival, as well as providing some predictability for in-river users. I believe closing the associated net locations is an important feature of the bill. Retiring the 200-plus permits, 600-plus nets, and closing associated watering leases is an important part of this bill. Finally, the mechanics of SB 82 will offer fishermen who choose to leave the fishery the opportunity to move to another fishery, open a new business, or maybe retire. Whatever their personal goals may be, in doing so, those of us who choose to remain in the fishery will have the opportunity to fish with our families and survive with viability and predictability in our businesses well into the future. I'd like to thank Senator Bjorkman and his staff for their work on the bill, not only for the fishermen, but also the historic fishery and the valuable resource it relies on to exist. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Well done. Marilyn Keener, Kenai, please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less, please.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Keener. My husband and I raised our kids as fourth generation set net fishermen here in Cook Inlet. We're all in favor of SB 82.
Thank you very much. Randy Meyer, Kasilov, good afternoon. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes or less.
My name is Randy Meyer. My family and I have had a set net site and have fished on the east side at Kasilov since 1995. My family and I are 100% behind SB 82. It would be good for those commercial fishermen who remain in the fishery and for those sport fishermen who would have less set nets harvesting fish in front of them. Please consider this bill, that it would be good for the whole Cook Inlet fishery. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Next up is Jeff. I'm not even going to attempt this. I could make a stab at it. But Jeff, I'll let you put your last name on the record for Kasilov in 2 minutes or less, please. Thank you.
Next up is Jeff.
Let's try this again. Jeff, can you hear us?
Yeah. Well, let me put your last name on the record.
Yes, my name.
2 minutes or less,
let's
please.
Let's take a brief.
All right, thank you. My name is Jeff.
Jeff, are you live streaming this?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you now. We're getting feedback on your end.
Next up is Jeff. Let's try this again. Jeff, can you hear us?
Can you hear me now?
I can. Turn your TV off. Your volume down.
I might be getting feedback. I'm listening to you online. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, my name on the record, my name is Jeff Bedoin. Yes, I am.
Hey, we got some.
Okay, let me mute my.
Do you support the bill? Yes or no?
I might be getting feedback. I'm listening to you online. Can you hear me now? All right. How about now? I turn the volume off. Do you hear me now?
We can hear you now. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. All right. Sorry about that. Yeah, my name is Jeff Doan. I've been a long time set netter, about 40 years. Anyway, I'm calling in. I sent an affidavit in or a number of pages to you yesterday through the Kenai LIO office. I know I only got 2 minutes here, but quickly, I'm in opposition to this as it's written. And I have been in the past when it was formerly under SB 90. And to make a correction to Senator Bjorkman, You said it represented the vast majority of centenarians on the east side. That's an incorrect statement. There's 66% of the east side centenarians fish south of the Kusilok River in the Kusilok section. And the other number, roughly 162 north of that area. So our centered in Kodiak is actually represents the primary, the most of the east side centenarians. Number, the Kusilok River, but this, historically, the Kusilok River stock, I believe, has been grossly exceeded 17 out of the last 20 years. Kenai is 17 out of the last 20 years. Last season, they had a historical record since statehood of 1 million up the Kusilok River, over 34 large king salmon. And of note, this whole principle of putting more fish in the river, and this has been grossly exceeded beyond anyone's imagination. And then the Kenai large king gull is supposed to, the law or statute says it's supposed to be managed as a unit, i.e. all sizes, which hasn't been done. We were closed over 34 large king salmon, which would not affect the sustainability of that stock whatsoever. But 1 million up the Kusilok certainly did and will continue to do. Gross over-escapement, but primarily the utilization of the said-net fishery to manage for escapements is the intent of the Entry Commission, AF 16.53.010, Regulation of Entry into Alaskan Commercial Fisheries. Purpose and findings of fact, SB 82 violates the CFEC limited permit issuance in 1975 as purpose and findings. It violates the state's policy of ADF&G as the long-term goal of achieving maximum sustained yield for all Alaska's fisheries. It certainly hasn't occurred and cannot occur under any kind of service, buyback or not. This goal by taking 200 permits was not justified under CFEC history, documentation about a permit in the 80s, throughout today. And the reduction of gear would cause the escapement goal setting regulation to be grossly exceeded and would not generate any purpose of any economic viability in that by doing so. It's going to have statewide implications on fisheries throughout this state, and it does not make sense at all and whatsoever. And for the East Side Coalition Association, it has 5 board members and it has no membership. Okay? So speaking.
Thank you for your testimony. Please send in the rest of it to the Senate Resource Committee. Thank you. All right. Now, one last time in the room. Anybody else in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none. Public testimony is now closed. Thank you, Mr. Coleman. Any other questions before we go on to our next presentation? Seeing none, we're going to have SB 68, public notice for water rights for Senator Giesel. We're going to open public testimony at this time. Yeah, I'll thank you for that. But I haven't decided yet. I could send out. Next up is SB 68. We've got 2 people online for questions only. Mr. Barrett from the Water Section Division of Mining, Land, and Water. So we're going to open public testimony. Is anyone in the room wishing to testify on Senate Bill 68? Water rights? Seeing none. Looking online, there's nobody to testify. Mr. Barrett's here for questions only. Senator Giesel appears to be correct. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. With that being said, I'm going to close public testimony. And committee action, I'm going to set an amendment deadline of Wednesday, April 26th at noon. Take a brief at ease. Senator Dunbar, thank you for that. We will set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 82 for next Wednesday as well. All right, we're going to take a brief at ease while we change the gavel.
Committee back to order. The next item on our agenda is Senate Bill 48. This is a carbon offset program on state land. So I like to refer to it as the trees bill. This would allow the state to begin the process of assessing the use of our forests to offset carbon. So the bill has been heard in the past. We're opening public testimony today. So public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will go online, and we have a few folks waiting. So I'm going to start out with Todd Lindley in Anchorage. Mr. Lindley, please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony. 2 minutes, please.
Good afternoon. This is Todd Lindley. I'm in Anchorage, Alaska, representing myself. I do not support this legislation. Senator Geisel, you refer to this bill as a tree bill. It should be known to the public that this is referred to the density bill because it's going to assess a forest trees per acre in order to compete in the carbon market. The invited testimony and presentation on the House side provided for review to legislature came from NGOs directly affiliated with the World Economic Forum. Verra, the primary presenter in one of the reputable carbon exchanges, is a company that is incorporated in the country of Colombia with a known fraud rate of 90%. Tell me, why is it that you want to let these people do business in our state? Let's look at anew, a child of the RISE Fund from the World Economic Forum. They were commissioned by the Dunleavy administration using taxpayer money to identify the carbon potential for offsets. This occurred well before the 2022 election with no mention to the public that this was a strategic policy for the state. In my opinion, this legislature should be not be deliberating on a vote to make this policy into law, but should be investigating collusion between the Dunleavy organization and foreign NGOs developing policy that they stand to gain substantial benefit in the way of money and power. All the while, Dunleavy handcuffs future governors by usurping his governing power to the World Economic Forum partners. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lindley. Next up is Ken Huckaba. Mr. Huckaba?
Yes.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony. 2 minutes, please.
My name is Ken Huckaba. I'm in Wasilla, Alaska. I represent myself. I also do not support this bill. I also would like to call attention to the process that's taken place and the risk the Alaskans are being asked to finance and support with their lands, capital, and resources. As entered into Senate records, a study was presented in August of 2022, notably before the election, titled Carbon Offset Opportunity Evaluation, that was paid for out of public funds to the WEF partner company BlueSource, which became ANEW. A key point made in this report on page 8 is the offsets are verifiable and registered on an approved offset registry such as Verra, which is another WEF partner organization. This non-governmental organization has a fraud rate of 90%, as mentioned before. Instead of considering a vote to pass this bill, it is believed that the Senate should be investigating this administration for colluding with the aforementioned WEF partner NGOs. These NGOs have financial and political interest in getting their policies instituted in Alaska. If this becomes law, the administration will cede power to the WEF and their partner NGOs to exclude future legislative review, oversight, audit, and control. This administration and the WEF is and will be manipulating legislation of special interest, endless desire for federal dollars printed for the Inflation Reduction Act, which is nothing but the New Green Deal. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. God bless you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Lydia Shoemaker in Wasilla. Ms. Shoemaker, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record. 2 minutes of testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Lydia Shoemaker, and I'm Wasilla, Alaska.
I represent myself, and I'm calling in opposition of SB 48. So first and foremost, we have not been presented with any actual numbers on what this may cost. We also know that about 20% of the theoretical revenue will come from or go to the third party, like a New Rivera, which both prior members have or citizens have tested that they work with the World Economic Forum. Roughly about another 18% is supposed to go to the revenues are supposed to go to insurance on this bill. So you're talking about 60% of the potential revenues going to Alaska, and none of the fiscal notes actually have any monetary value listed on them as a revenue. So this legislation also leaves Alaskans open to losing our rights through the implementation of regulation. This is stated on the bill, page 9, line 15. Also, all of the power and decision based on this bill goes to the commissioner with no legislative oversight. My main reason for opposing this legislation is not because I'm opposed to good stewardship, which Alaska has been doing and does a very good job of. I am opposed to enslaving the future generations of this great resource-abundant state to a group of elite technocrats in the name of corporation virtue signaling. Thank you for spending time on this bill and taking my testimony today.
Thank you, Ms. Shoemaker, for your testimony. Next up is Cassie Andrews from Anchorage. Ms. Andrews? Introduce yourself, please, and 2 minutes of testimony.
Hello, yes, my name is Cassie Andrews. I'm representing myself from Anchorage. Committee members, I oppose this legislation. The basis of this legislation is about creating revenue for the state, but the revenue within the fiscal notes is blank. This concept is not one that needs to be fast-tracked prior to understanding the real risk, which is what we would be doing if this legislation proceeds. The broad assumptions and statements that this could bring billions in revenue with zero actually listed in the fiscal notes is cause for enough concern. Another cause for concern is the fact that VERA, a nonprofit incorporated in Columbia, WEF partner, invited by the House for testimony, VERA approves 3/4 of all voluntary carbon offset projects and has been found to be at over 90% fraud rate. The investigation by Guardian found that only a handful of VERA's rainforest projects showed evidence of deforestation reductions, according to 2 studies with further analysis indicating that 94% of the credit projects had no benefit to the climate and should have never been approved. We do not need to stand up a program with personnel. We do not need to spend a dime more on this. The cost estimate lists close to $2 million for 2024. Please do not expend any more energy entertaining these fraudulent boondoggles. Remove this bill from the ledger completely. SB 49 also has the same issues with fraud. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much, Ms. Andrews. Next up is Bert Houtling. Welcome. He's in Big Lake. If you would introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony, up 2 minutes.
My name is Bert Houtling. I represent myself. So what does carbon credits, carbon capture, and ESG all have in common? It's just another Ponzi scam to make sure the special interests get richer and the rest of us become poor. I have been informed there is $19.5 billion available to spend on the climate smart agriculture in the next 5 years. This is part of the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed last August. Something the governor, I understand, knew about when campaigning, never let us Alaskans know at the time, until he announced the bill when the 33rd legislative session in Juneau was to begin. Yesterday, I attended a meeting that the state of Alaska DNR Commissioner John Boyle explained your choreographed narrative on the governor's behalf about the carbon initiative before us today. They had nothing to say bad about it. It was all sunshine and rainbows as far as they were concerned. I want to make sure you never forget who will ultimately be paying for all this. If you think the prices of things that have skyrocketed over the last 2 years was bad, just wait till you have to pay for this. Heating fuel, natural gas, LNG, gasoline for our vehicles will all skyrocket and go. And so all the costs we use to pay for the goods, that money branding scam brought to us by the WEF. So what impact will these ideas actually have on our environment? I'm pretty sure nobody in the room today can give us one statistical answer that can back up this money grabbing scam being rammed down our throats. Ask yourselves why only red states at this point have been targeted with passing these carbon initiatives. What is the percentage of CO2 that is actually in our atmosphere? How long will it take for our current usage and improvements that have continued to be made over the last years have? Will it take to actually make our planet unlivable for human, plant, and animal life if we don't do this? These and many more common sense questions that you should be asking over and over again, you still have no scientific or statistical provable answers you can give us. The only answers are here are based on theories and feelings, never any rock-solid, provable data to back them up. Again, it's all theories and feelings at this point in time. I'm against passing anything to do with the carbon credits, carbon capture. The oil companies are already doing the latter. They openly admit allows them to deliver more product to the market without wasting valuable real estate space that carbon would take away if it was still there. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we go to Kasilov. George Pierce is next. Mr. Pierce, please introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, my name is George Pierce, and I live in Kasilov. I'm representing me and my community here, and we oppose this bill. This carbon capture is a joke. Carbon capture is an expensive failure after billions of dollars in public and private investment for over decades. There are no carbon capture success stories, only huge failures. Here's some examples. The Petro Nova plant in Texas, the poster child of CO2 removal, is constantly underperforming and headed for closure. The San Juan Generating Station in New Mexico, one of the largest capture projects in the world, headed for closure underperformance. Building a project is another source of air and carbon pollution. The largest corporation polluter in 2018 was responsible for releasing 119 million tons of CO2, and that was only one company. So 12 million to fund direct air capture and possible removal of maybe 100,000 tons of carbon dioxide is laughable. 80 to 90 million in 10 years in revenue, and you haven't even added any subsidies yet, and we all know you've done for that. A huge amount of energy required to power carbon capture. We put more CO2 into the atmosphere than it has removed.
Mr. Pierce, would you incur
well failure during injection, blowouts with handling of large amounts of CO2, storage locations been.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce, for your testimony. Please feel free to send in written testimony. And the last person up here is from Wasilla, Ken Griffin. Mr. Griffin, welcome. If you'd introduce yourself for the record and give us 2 minutes of testimony.
Yeah, my name is Ken Griffin. I'm in Wasilla, and I'm representing myself as an Alaskan citizen, a voter, a contributor to the community, a taxpayer, a volunteer person, someone who pays attention to the economy and has read these bills through and through. Okay, both the House bills and this bill. So this is obviously and clearly a boondoggle. As the other people said, there are 20 other states fighting these bills. Okay, there are 20 other states. This has not been shown in any way to be profitable anywhere. No one's made this profitable. How is this going to help the economy grow? How is this going to get citizens to work and protect our sovereignty? It's not. And they want to talk about locking up the land for 55 years. We've only been a state 64 years. The type of development that we've had in this state in 64 years has been phenomenal. But we can't just start locking up large swaths of land for 55 years on the hopes that even for that 55 years that these credits will be valuable. Obviously, we're ceding power to the UN in this aspect because they're the ones who come up with the sustainable climate goals. That's ridiculous because that sovereign power should be held at the level of the state. We can't give away our power to an unelected body. and or bureaucrats for that matter. This program all around the world has been a dismal failure, both monetarily and for citizens' rights. The bill says you can ski, hike, and hunt on that land, but that matters not. What matters is the availability to develop that land, not to mention nobody, DNR, nobody's taken testimony on this. They've allowed citizens to call in for 2 minutes on these bills prior and this one here. No commissioner, nobody's done Levy, nobody's called and said, hey, let's have an open format of debate so we can discuss these bills because, after all, we're spending your money. I oppose these bills. I'm an educated citizen, and I oppose them, and I beg you as my representatives to please just put the brakes on this. Stop for a minute. Just examine it. Look at what the other states are opposing it as well. It's non-functional. It's non-profitable. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Griffin. With that, I see no further individuals online wishing to testify and no further individuals in the room wishing to testify. So I'm going to close public testimony. There will be an amendment deadline set for Senate Bill 48, Carbon Offsets, for Monday, April 24th at 5 p.m. Members can email their amendments to the Senate Resources Committee, senate.resources@akledge.gov. As we reach the end of this meeting, I will also notify members. You may have noticed today we moved Senate Bill 92, Navigable Waters, back to Senate Resource Committee. We received some pertinent amendments, suggestions from some Native corporations that we would like to add to the bill in this committee. So we will hear the bill once we receive the committee substitute. That concludes our agenda for today. The next meeting will be Monday, April 24th at 3:30 p.m. At that time, we're going to hear a presentation on a fee proposal for foreign polluters. And we will also have the first hearing of House Bill 104, Expedited Timber Sales, by Representative Kronk. So at this time, the meeting is adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:35 p.m.